Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. The 265th successor of Peter has taken the name Francis. He hasn't yet told us why, but one presumes it's after St. Francis of Assisi, who was born in an Umbrian hilltop town in 1181.
Francis of Assisi, the one saint whom all succeeding generations have succeeded in canonizing, is probably the best-known saint in the whole calendar.
The 19th-century French Protestant writer Ernest Renan declared that after Jesus, he was the only perfect Christian. Pope Pius XI, in an encyclical celebrating the 7th centenary of the death of Francis, said the same.
Whether or not Francis was the one and only perfect Christian, comments biographer Abbe Engelbert, he was certainly the only Christian to take Christ quite literally at his word. No one else has ever dared to do so.
Perhaps Thomas Merton comes closest to the truth when he says, "Merely to know St. Francis is to understand the gospel, and to follow him in his true integral spirit is to live the gospel in all its fullness."
Francis was born in Assisi around the year 1181. His father was a rich cloth merchant, and as a young man, Francis enjoyed wearing fine clothes and taking part in feasting and revelry with the other fashionable young men of the town.
But Assisi was not the peaceful place it is today. War, wrote Fortini, an historian and former mayor of Assisi, was the preferred occupation, the favourite passion of this town.
Francis grew up in the atmosphere of civil war, and like most young men of his acquaintance, he dreamed of going to war and winning glory and knighthood.
But a series of incidents in his life brought him gradually to another way of thinking. When he was about 20, Francis took part in a battle on the Tiber between neighbouring Perugia and his hometown. Perugia won, and Francis spent a year languishing in a Perugian prison.
This experience was followed by a serious illness, which left him listless and with a strange distaste for former joys. He returned to his customary occupations, including that of serving in his father's shop. But he still dreamed of war, and when the opportunity presented itself of fighting for the Pope, he prepared himself excitedly.
Before he left home, Francis had a strange dream. He saw his house changed into a place full of weapons for war. A voice told him that these were all his, and that there would also be a bride for him to marry.
Francis took this to be an omen of his success in battle, and the next day he saddled his horse and set off to join the pontifical army in Apulia.
But he never got there. That night he stopped to rest at Spoleto, and there he had another dream. The same voice asked him where he was going. "To the war," he replied eagerly.
"And who will do better for you, the servant or the master?" "The master," answered Francis. "Then why are you seeking the servant instead of the master?" "Lord, what do you wish me to do?" said Francis. "Return to the place of your birth. There you will be told what you are to do."
From that moment, life changed for Francis. But it was not an easy conversion. He was not suddenly illuminated or told to found an order. It was a slow process. He prayed, he meditated. He retired to a cave outside the town and for a long time found no peace. Then he came out, radiantly happy. He had fallen in love. All the visions were now clear to him. His weapons were to be spiritual ones. His bride, the Lady Poverty.
But there were further steps to be taken along the road. Francis had always been generous, and he now dedicated himself to the poor, giving them food, money, and clothing.
Still, he was not yet one of them himself, and there was another test in store for him. In prayer, God had told him, "If you would find me, despise the things of this life, renounce yourself, and prefer bitterness to sweetness, for only thus can you come to full understanding."
Francis himself tells in his testament what the bitterness was that he had to prefer.
"While I was in sin, it seemed very bitter to me to see lepers, and the Lord himself led me among them, and I had mercy upon them. And when I left them, that which seemed bitter to me was changed into sweetness of soul and body. And afterward I lingered a little and left the world.
Francis was riding his horse one day when he came face to face with a leper. His first instinct was to turn and flee, but then he remembered what he had been told. He got down off his horse and took the man in his arms, thrusting money into his hand. Next day, he went to the leper house and made friends with all the inmates, asking their pardon for having held them all in disgust.
Shortly afterwards, Francis was praying one day in the little ruined chapel of San Damiano. Suddenly, the figure of Christ on the crucifix called out to him, "Francis, go and repair my house, which, as you see, is falling into ruin."
Francis tended to take things literally, and on this occasion he believed he was to restore the church of St. Damian. Only later did he realize that God meant the whole church.
He rushed off home and took some of the richest bales of his father's cloth and rode off to Foligno, where he sold the lot, and his horse into the bargain, so that he had to walk 3 leagues home. He took the money to the priest at San Damiano, but the priest refused it, so Francis tossed the purse onto a window ledge in the church.
When his father heard, he was furious and locked his son up, but Francis' mother soon freed him, and he hid for a time outside the town. Then his father brought a law case against him, and Francis decided to put himself under the protection of the bishop.
Standing between his father and the bishop, in the presence of a huge crowd, Francis took off his fine clothes and laid them at his father's feet, declaring that now he wished to serve God, he would call only God his father. He had now cut all ties and was a free man.
One last incident served to show Francis the way his future lay. After San Damiano, he had restored other churches, and the last of these was the little chapel in the woods that was to be the hub of the Franciscan world, the Porziuncola, the little portion of land. It was while he was hearing Mass there one day that he heard the passage in the Gospel where Christ established the rule of conduct for his disciples.
"Go, preach, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold, nor silver, nor brass in your purses, nor scrip for your journey, neither 2 coats, neither shoes, nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. And into whatsoever city or town you shall enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide till you go thence. And when you come into a house, salute it. And if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it."
When the priest explained that this meant that the disciples of Christ had received the order to preach everywhere penitence, without carrying anything with them, and to depend on God alone to provide for their needs, Francis cried out, "This is what I wish. This is what I am seeking. This I long with all my inmost heart to do."
It was the final revelation. Now he had no more doubts. And from that moment on, until his death 18 years later, Francis did just that. He threw away his staff, his smart cloak, his shoes and his leather belt, leaving himself only a tunic which he tied with a cord and making himself a rough cloak.
It was not long before Francis was joined in his new life by other young men, and when the company had reached a round dozen, they went to Rome in the year 1210 to ask the Pope's blessing on their rule.
2 years later, a young girl named Claire left her family home to follow Francis, and so the poor Clares were established.
"Listen, little poor ones called by the Lord, who have come together from many parts and provinces. Live always in truth, that you may die in obedience. Do not look at the life outside, for that of the spirit is better. I beg you through great love to use with discretion the arms which the Lord gives you. Those who are weighed down by sickness, and the others who are wearied because of them, all of you, bear it in peace. For you will sell this fatigue at a very high price, and each one of you will be crowned queen in heaven with the Virgin Mary."
In his testament, written just a few weeks before his death, Francis tells how he and his first friars lived.
And those who came to receive life gave to the poor everything which they were capable of possessing. And they were content with one tunic, patched inside and out, with a cord and short trousers. And we had no desire for anything more. We who were clerics used to say the office as other clerics did. The lay brothers said the Our Father, and we quite willingly stayed in churches. And we were simple and subject to all. And I used to work with my hands, and I still desire to work, and I firmly wish that all my brothers give themselves to honest work. Let those who do not know how to work learn, not from desire of receiving wages for their work, but as an example and in order to avoid idleness. And when we are not paid for our work, let us have recourse to the table of the Lord, seeking alms from door to door.
Francis forbade his friars to accept churches or houses not in conformity with holy poverty, and to accept only such hospitality as fits their profession as strangers and pilgrims on earth. Nor were they to accept the protection of pontifical favours.
Later, Francis' original intention was adapted by other people, and the friars began to live in houses, and the simple lifestyle of their founder was abandoned. Francis himself resigned the office of Minister General and lived his last years with a few devoted followers.
On Mount Laverna in 1224, he received the stigmata, the marks of Christ's passion, and 2 years later died in Assisi at the Porziuncola, the Franciscans' first home.
Francis was canonized only 2 years later.
You were listening there to a programme presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.